Stay tuned for Africa News Tonight, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Frances Alonso reporting. A jury has reached a verdict in the federal death penalty trial of Boston Marathon bomber Dokar Tsarnaev. The verdict is expected to be announced shortly in a U.S. district court. Lawyers and survivors of the bombing are gathering in the court. The verdict was reached Wednesday afternoon after a little over 12 hours of deliberations over 2 days. Tsarnaev's lawyers admitted he participated in the bombings, but said his now dead older brother was a driving force behind the 2013 deadly attack. The jury was asked to decide 30 charges against Tsarnaev, including using a weapon of mass destruction. If the jury convicts him, it will move on to the second phase of the trial to decide whether he should receive the death penalty or spend the rest of his life in prison. More than 200 elderly and infirm Yazidis were freed on Wednesday by Islamic State militants who had been holding them captive since overrunning their villages in northwestern Iraq last year. The reunion was emotional. Some were too exhausted and disoriented to speak. A Reuters reporter saw a group of 216 people handed over to Kurdish forces near the city of Kirkuk. An explosion at a house in central Jakarta injured 4 people, according to police. A police spokesman said the most severely injured person was hit in the chest by nails in that blast. The Jakarta police spokesman says that an object found had nails and gray powder without a detonator or cables. The bomb seems to have exploded because of pressure, and an investigation continues. This is VOA News. A state-run media outlet in Iran is reporting that Iranian Navy ships have left for waters near Yemen amid a Saudi-led airstrike campaign to halt the advance of Iranian-backed Shiite rebels in the country. Iran's press TV Wednesday quoted a rear admiral as saying that the fleet will provide safety for Iran's shipping lanes and protect the interests in high seas. He said it will also seek to keep commercial ships safe from pirates. The Greek Prime Minister Alexis Tsipras met with Russian President Vladimir Putin for bilateral talks in Moscow Wednesday. During the meeting in the Kremlin, Mr. Putin indicated that Russia could lift its embargo on food imports from Greece. That is, speaking to reporters after the meeting, the Russian president said that the leader of Greece did not ask for financial aid. Mr. Putin added that he and the Greek prime minister had discussed Greece's possible participation in the Turkish Stream pipeline project. An Afghan army soldier opened fire on a NATO-led troops, killing one before getting shot and killed in return fire. This happened in eastern Afghanistan. An incident in Jalalabad today resulted in the death of one Resolute Support service member. That came from a statement from the offices of the Resolute Support Mission. The statement added that that investigation is underway and a motive for the attack is unknown. British police were hunting for a gang on Wednesday who raided safety deposit boxes in London's major jewelry business district, making off with cash and gems and what local media said could be the country's biggest ever heist. The Metropolitan Police said the thieves used heavy cutting equipment to get into the vault at the unofficially unnamed deposit business in Hatton Garden, which is home to almost 300 gold, diamond, and gem dealers and more than 50 shops where they broke into the safety boxes. This victim says he's at a loss at how it could have happened.
It's a big shock for not only for me, for the whole people who's here, actually. Because, you know, you cannot expect for the things to happen.
Police gave no details of what exactly was stolen, but the Sun newspaper said the haul could be as much as £200 million or $300 million. Royal Dutch Shell has announced it's buying gas producer BG Group for $70 billion. It gives Shell a bigger share of the natural gas market as oil prices fall. The companies put out a joint statement Wednesday urging shareholders on both sides to approve the deal. Shell says the takeover will add 25% to its oil and gas reserves and increase production by 20% over 2014. I'm Frances Alonso.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Wuhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Cameroonian refugees displaced by the Boko Haram insurgency in northern Cameroon say they are living in desperate conditions, going without food, water and medicine for days at a time. They complain the government and UN agencies are focusing solely on Nigerian refugees and ignoring their needs.
That's Moki Edwin Kinzeka reporting from northern Cameroon. Details coming up.
Also in the news, Ugandan police have arrested four people in connection with last month's murder of a local prosecutor who dealt with terror cases. And Niger President Mahamadou Issoufou says a coalition of military units from Niger and Chad has won several victories against the rebel forces of Boko Haram.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, Niger President Mahamadou Issoufou says a coalition of military units from Niger and Chad has won several victories against the rebel forces of Boko Haram in recent weeks. Mr. Issoufou was in New York to promote UN support for a West African regional coalition to end 6 years of Boko Haram violence in Nigeria. In recent months, the insurgent forces have expanded their attacks to Cameroon, Niger, and Chad. The president of Niger predicted the defeat of Boko Haram fighters in the Lake Chad area. A spokesman for the Nigerian military says units from Niger and Chad have retaken four towns held by Boko Haram: Dauchi, Damasak, Gashagar, and Mala Fatori. He says military forces killed about 300 Boko Haram insurgents and recovered a large cache of weapons. He says the victories are a result of a month-long campaign in Niger to secure the Lake Chad region.
Cameroonian refugees displaced by the Boko Haram insurgency in northern Cameroon say they are living in desperate conditions, going without food, water and medicine for days at a time. They complain the government and UN agencies are focusing solely on Nigerian refugees and ignoring their needs. Moki Edwin Kendeka visited with some of these internally displaced people and reports from northern Cameroon.
Displaced school children sing here at a government school in Mora in northern Cameroon, some 25 kilometers from the Nigerian border. Their teacher, Feyu Alice, says the children study under very difficult conditions.
That one is overcrowded classroom. As you can see, I'm just managing. There's no way to even pass in class, but I'm trying my best. There are illness. You have cough, fever. Since the classroom is crowded, they're having wounds on their leg.
Lawanda Tekone, head teacher of government school in Kolofata, not far from Mora, says his school is finding it difficult to cope with Cameroonian children displaced by Boko Haram activity in their own country.
Ici au campus, ils sont au moins 520. Il y a beaucoup de choses qui manquent.
He says the more than 500 students in his school have just one portable water source and they do not have even a single latrine. He says they are living under desperate conditions. The government of Cameroon says at least 70,000 school children and 100,000 people have been displaced by the Boko Haram insurgency. Fekwe Ngaha Joseph, chief of Amang village near Mora, says he has been asking well-wishers to contribute and take care of internally displaced persons seeking refuge in his village. He says for 8 months running, they have been moving from mosque to mosque and from church to church, asking people to contribute maize, sorghum and millet to feed the hundreds of internally displaced people living in their village. Musa Ibrahim, whose 3 wives and 9 children were displaced from Fort Okol 2 months ago after an attack by Boko Haram fighters left at least 500 dead, says the food they received from the chief, Fekwe Ngaha Joseph, is largely insufficient.
Si vraiment les autorités nous comprennent, il faut qu'ils fassent quelque chose. Il y a les enfants qui ne trouvent pas à manger. Souvent, nous les grands, on n'arrive pas à manger.
He says because of acute food shortages, they keep the little they have for the sick and children, and that they drink pap without sugar and share each tablet of soup among many people. He says he is pleading with Cameroon authorities, the international community, and United Nations agencies to immediately come to their rescue. The Vice President of Cameroon's National Assembly, Joseph Mbandam, says Cameroon has been concentrating on fighting Boko Haram and not taking proper care of internally displaced persons.
The UN High Commission for Refugees takes care of foreigners who have drifted into Cameroon. But who takes care of Cameroonians who have been displaced? I think that the government is not taking care of the displaced populations. We think about soldiers, and we're not thinking of those who are going hungry, homeless, and have been sent away from their areas of subsistence.
Najat Rushdie, coordinator of the United Nations system in Cameroon, says the assistance is urgently needed to save lives of people suffering from the Boko Haram insurgency.
We need to work on the early recovery of the economy here, and you know that the security situation, unfortunately, is really, really having a huge impact on the economy. We have villages of 5,000, 7,000 people, so again, thanks to them and for their solidarity and generosity. But somehow we have also to have a number of accompanying measures, so we make sure that the social cohesion is there.
Last month, when he visited refugees and internally displaced persons in northern Cameroon, United Nations Refugee Chief Antonio Guterres said masses of people fleeing the terrorist group Boko Haram have created a crisis comparable to the refugee situation caused by Syria's civil war, and a shortfall of international funding was hampering the UN's ability to help the situation. Moki, Edwin Kinzika, VOA News, Mora, Northern Cameroon.
Well, this Saturday, Nigerians go to the polls to elect state governors. The outcome of that vote could determine the true power President-elect Buhari can yield when he takes office. Mr. Buhari's All People's Congress Party has brought allegations of vote rigging in Imo State. It accuses outgoing President Jonathan's People's Democratic Party of using fake soldiers to prevent delivery of ballots to some areas during the presidential election. It says it fears a repeat of such a move in Imo State this Saturday. Besides governors, voters will also elect members of state assemblies. You're listening to Africa News Tonight live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
I'm Yehiz Wuhib, 13 past the hour. Here's a recap of our top stories. Niger's President Mahamadou Issoufou says a coalition of military units from Niger and Chad has won several victories against the rebel forces of Boko Haram. And this Saturday, Nigerians go to the polls to elect state governors. The outcome of that vote could determine the true power President-elect Buhari can yield when he takes office. And we'd like to hear your thoughts on our stories. You can write to us at Africa News Tonight, Voice of America, 330 Independence Avenue, Southwest Washington, D.C., 20237.
Kenya has taken strong economic action following last week's terrorist attack at Garissa University. The attack by Somalia's Al-Shabaab's militant group killed nearly 150 people at the university. The government has suspended the licenses of 13 Somali remittance firms. Also, the government has frozen the bank accounts of nearly 90 individuals and firms suspected of financing terrorism in the country. Somali's central bank governor, Bashir Issa, tells Reuters that blocking remittances will have have a devastating effect on Kenya's Somali community, which numbers about 1 million people. Kathleen Newland is co-founder of the Migration Policy Institute in Washington and director of the Migrants, Migration and Development Program. She spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua about Kenya's suspension of the Somali remittance firms.
It's very much a double-edged sword. The Kenyan action is not terribly different from the actions that other governments have taken, including the United States and Great Britain, to really crack down on money transfer operations that they believe could be used to finance terrorist activities. But having said that, in all these cases, they're shutting down firms that ordinary Somalis rely upon for often very substantial proportions of their household income. That includes Somali refugees in Kenya, as well as Somali Kenyans who have relatives abroad.
Is there any way to put a figure on how much money might be affected by this move?
Well, it's difficult to say, you know, with any precision, but Kenya receives well over $1 billion a year in remittances. It's not broken down by ethnic group, so we don't really know how much of that sum is going to the Somali community in Kenya or Somali refugees. But the few sort of small-scale studies that have been done suggest that the sums in many cases account for a substantial portion of families' income and household income because the Somali community is pretty far-flung. You know, there's substantial Somali communities in the U.S., in Europe, and in other countries as well. So these remittance flows are important to people, which is not to say that money from abroad hasn't gone to the Shabaab or other terrorist forces. So I guess what I would say is it's kind of a blunt instrument to just close money transfer operations, you know, without making an attempt to really discover which ones are being used by terrorist organizations. I think another effect of this action by the Kenyan government is going to be to further alienate the Somali Kenyan community, which feels that it has been unfairly implicated in Shabaab activities when the vast majority of Somali Kenyans feel themselves more victimized by Shabaab than sympathetic to it.
So are there any viable alternatives at this time to the firms that were handling the remittances?
Nothing that is as efficient and competitively priced as the Hawala organizations, as these Somali money transfer organizations are known. They operate through this sort of vast international network of Somalis around the world, and they operate on a basis of trust among brokers. So a Somali who wants to send money to a relative in Kenya from London would just call up one of these firms. They will call or text their counterpart in Kenya and say, you know, give this recipient this much money. Minimal paperwork, which of course is part of the problem, makes it difficult to trace the sums. But it's minimal paperwork. It's extremely efficient in terms of timing. It's very competitive in terms of exchange rates. So it is going to be hard for people to replace that service with mainstream Western money transfer operators like Western Union or MoneyGram at the same price.
Kathleen Newland is co-founder of the Migration Policy Institute in Washington. She spoke to VOA's Joe DiCapua.
Ugandan police have arrested four people in connection with last month's murder of a local prosecutor who dealt with terror cases. AP reports they were arrested in a Kampala suburb yesterday. One of the men is identified as Jamal Kiyemba, who reportedly was once detained at the U.S. base at Guantanamo Bay in Cuba. Kiyemba is described as a convert to Islam and once lived in Britain. He was later arrested as a terror suspect in Pakistan. No formal charges have been brought yet. Police say he's being questioned about the case and other crimes in Uganda. Prosecutor Joanna Kagezi was killed on March 30th when she got out of her car.
Twenty minutes past the hour, this is African News Tonight on the Voice of America. The Global Movement for Tribal People's Rights, Survival International, says it has received reports that Ethiopia's Lower Omo Valley tribe, the Kwegu, is starving due to the destruction of their forest and the drying up of the river on which their livelihoods depend. The Kwegus live along the banks of the Omo River in Ethiopia's Lower Omo Valley. They are a tribe of 1,000 people who hunt, fish, and grow crops along the river banks. Survival International reports that the massive Gibe III Dam and large-scale irrigation taking place in the region is robbing the Kwegu of their water and fish supplies. Elizabeth Hunter is an Africa campaign officer for Survival International.
The situation with the Kwegu is extremely serious. Survival has received very alarming reports that they're now starving, and this is because they hunt and they fish and they grow plants along the side of the River Omo. All of this livelihood now, right as I speak, is being destroyed, and that is because firstly, the Gibe III Dam, which is this massive hydroelectric dam, it'll be the tallest in Africa, is going to dry up or finish with the flood, which the Kwegu and other tribes depend on for cultivating in the rich silt of the flood alongside the riverbanks.
Hunter said, linked to the dam, a massive land grab is taking place under the direction of the Ethiopian government to create plantations along the Omo River.
The plantations, particularly the sugarcane plantation, the Kuraz project, which is a government-run project, is going to need a lot of water. So they're already siphoning off water into irrigation channels from the river. So for the Kwegu, this means that the fish are going to disappear. And as the plantations expand, they're saying that all the riverine forests, which they depend on for honey because they have hives up in the trees, has all been destroyed.
Hunter emphasized that the clearing of the land is forcing the Kwegu tribe to become dependent on other tribes and the government for survival. Alimayehu Tegenu is the Minister of Water, Irrigation and Energy for Ethiopia. He says the Gibe III Dam and the irrigation that is being done for their projects will not affect the water supply of the tribes along the Omo River banks.
The upper stream of the dam is in gorge, so it will not affect anybody in the gorge. Downstream side also, the dam will not affect the people because the water that we will release from the dam is a very regulated water. The people will not be affected by the dam.
However, Hunter said the Kwegus are being forced by the government into resettlement.
Well, the government claims this is all being done, you know, in the name of development. The big problem is that there has been no consultation or very little consultation, and certainly none of the tribal people who live in the Lower Omo have given their full, free, prior and informed consent to these projects, both the dam and the plantations. So this means, for example, the Kwegu say, we know absolutely nothing about this. The government come to us, they don't tell us anything. All they say is you're going to be forced to move off your land in this project known as villagization.
Minister Alimayehu said the Kwegu will receive a plot of land and access to water and irrigation from the sugar plantation. He says the government has discussed this directly with the Kwegu.
We have sufficiently discussed, and people currently they request to be part of the sugar plantation. Accordingly, we accommodated and we will accommodate.
Minister Alimayehu says the tribes along the Omo River banks will benefit on a long-term basis from the dam and sugar plantations.
The sugar plantation is very far from the dam, and the life of the people is part of the sugar plantation program. There will be irrigation schemes for the people around the sugar plantation. The sugar plantation will improve the life of the people in that area.
In addition, he said while the tribes will not be relocated off of their land, they are building homes for them on their land.
no plan to mobilize to other places, but we have constructed houses for them to settle in their location.
Survival International's Elizabeth Hunter says her group was recently told by tribespeople along the banks that they do not want to live in new houses and were never asked what they wanted.
The other extremely worrying thing is the government has not come up with any compensation plan for these people who are being asked to give up everything, their livelihood, their way of life, that very deep connection they have as tribal people to the land, and no mitigation measures have been put in place.
Hunter said the Kwegu will receive 5 or 6 heads of cattle on the resettlements, which she says is nothing compared to the amount they have now. She said cattle are like money in the bank for the tribes people because when crops fail, the cattle can be traded at local markets for money for them to buy food. But without cattle to trade, they will no longer be independent. Hunter also pointed out that some people do want the benefits that go along with development, such as having schools and health clinics. But she said these benefits should not come at the cost of them having to give up their land. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington. In news elsewhere, a state-run media outlet in Iran is reporting that Iranian Navy ships have left for waters near Yemen amid a Saudi-led airstrike campaign to halt the advance of Iranian-backed Shiite rebels in the country. Iran's press TV today quoted Rear Admiral Habbollah Sayari as saying the fleet will provide safety for Iran's shipping lanes and protect the country's interest in the high seas. He said it will also seek to keep commercial ships safe from pirates. The fleet, which includes a destroyer and another vessel, is sailing to the Gulf of Aden and the Bab al-Mandab Strait, the main access point to the Red Sea for ships going to the Suez Canal. Egypt has also sent naval vessels to waters off the Yemeni coast. Tensions are high in Yemen due to the conflict between Houthi rebels and forces loyal to the country's internationally backed president, Abdrabu Mansour Hadi. A medical official told the French news agency that 22 people were killed and more than 70 wounded in tank and mortar shelling by rebel forces today on residential areas in Yemen's main southern city of Aden.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. Stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali, coming up at 18:30 UTC. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at www.voaafrica.com. And on behalf of our Africa News Tonight producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Linus Remkes, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Douglas Simpoga. Join me for Reporters Roundtable every Thursday at 17:30 UTC. We'll take an in-depth look at an African news topic important to you. We'll have African journalists and expert guests share their ideas on the topic at hand. So, please plan to be with us every Thursday at 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
This is a message in the public interest from VOA Africa.
Malaria kills thousands of people each year, but there are some simple things you can do to protect your family. If you can, put screens in your windows. A simple screen can keep disease-carrying mosquitoes out of your home. If you go outside, wear light-colored clothing and long pants and long sleeves, especially when it is dark and mosquitoes are most active. After it rains, empty all containers of standing water. The water in just one discarded tire can become a breeding ground for thousands of mosquitoes. Make sure your home is clear of debris and anything that holds water, including discarded cans, water containers, and rubbish. Empty containers that livestock drink from regularly so that mosquitoes cannot breed there.
That was a message in the public interest.